Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser said it all.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why X and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for another episode. My guest on this episode is Sam Mu. We talk about his family, the Samoan SWAT team, the Head Shrinkers, and much, much more. That interview is coming up very, very soon. Again, I hope everybody's new year is going great. I hope that you guys are surviving all the snow that certain parts of the country are getting. I hope you're surviving, if you're out west, I hope you're surviving the horrific fires. My thoughts and my good vibes go out to everybody out there that is suffering in any form of fashion from what would be considered by most people, whether it's a little concern or a huge concern. I'm sending you all love in this current time and into the new year. And hope that things get better for you and you find some peace coming out of everything. So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have my interview with Sam Mu. So stick around.
Hey, you bums, we have to take a quick break.
Phil Singer Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit PhilSingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is PhilSingerGames, PhilSingerGames.com to order now. If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number 2, and Screams.
We're back on Wrestling Nostalgia.
And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. This time we're being joined by the legendary Sam Mu. Sam Mu, how are you?
Good, Dave. How are you, sir?
I'm good. It's an honor to be talking to you. Man, there's so much we could talk about. I had to pick and choose what we talk about. But let's start, because obviously everyone knows about your incredible family. I'm going to start right off the top by sending you my condolences. Because, you know, not too far in the past, you lost not only your Uncle Sika, but your father Afa. So I want to send you my good vibes and well wishes and my condolences for that. But
And obviously, like I said, your father is Offa, your Sheik is your uncle, the Wild Samoans, and they trained you to wrestle. What's it like training with the Wild Samoans?
Man, it's wild. It really was. I mean, not just because of the name, but it was crazy, you know, being a young kid and being able to grow up with your idols and, you know, do the things that the way I was brought up and broke in. It was a good time. A good time.
Yeah. And like right off the bat, almost in 83, you filled in for Sika because he when he was injured, and you helped your father Offa defend the WWF tag titles. You were only like 19 or 20 years old at the time. What was that like? I mean, you were literally just thrown into the fire right off the bat, teaming with your father, you know, doing, you know, tag title defenses in the WWF. That had to be wild for you.
Oh yeah, it was crazy. I mean, I had just broken into business. I was a baby face, nonetheless, in the world class at the time. I was in transition. I wasn't comfortable. You know, that was my first territory, and I was green and everything like that. So I was getting ready to make the transition to Bill Watts' territory.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So that's when Sika had and my dad just won the tag team championships, and they were going to replace him at the time. And my dad was having none of it. He wasn't going to tag team with any other Samoan unless it was his Captain Lou Albino or his son, which was me. So that kind of left it up in the air there. And Andre the Giant at that time was coming through all the territories. And he had seen me when I was in Texas. And Vince McMahon Sr., you know, had told Andre about, you know, what my dad had said about not wanting to tag with anybody. And Andre put in the good word. He said, yes, his son is a big kid. He says, put him in there. And next thing you know, I'm standing out there, couldn't even grow a mustache. I think, yeah, I was about 17, 18 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy to think of that position. But it had to be somewhat of a comfort for you, right? With your dad, right? I mean, you had to know, you know, you could lean on him a little bit and you were good hands there. So, I mean,
not really. It was all ribs and everything. I mean, remember now they don't speak English. You know, that was, I just loved being babyface. I just left rubbing elbows and kissing babies. And now I'm exposed, you know. So
yeah. Yeah. And then also I want to talk early on in your career, you wrestled quite a bit in Montreal.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, the only reason I wanted to bring this up is because of Dino Bravo. Because so many people, when they think Dino Bravo, they only think of that late 80s run, right? And everything else. But Dino Bravo, especially in Montreal, especially a few years earlier, he was so damn good and so over. And you know, I mean, his later WWE, he was a little more limited. But how good was Dino Bravo during that time period when you were working Montreal?
Yeah, that's just when I had left WWF at the time, and I was doing a lot of Japan. And I went up to Montreal and had a talk with Dino. Dino was a really good guy, and he seen something in this young kid at the time that, you know, was just eager to learn and eager to run with the ball. And he kind of took me under his wing and, you know, gave me the ball. And we had a good run over there in Montreal. We held some records for attendance in like the Paul Sauvé Arena that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, just being a young kid and doing all these accomplishments and working with these guys, it was a pleasure.
Yeah. Well, and also in Montreal, when you were there, was your cousin Fatu. He was in that area at that time. When Montreal kind of dried up, you guys went to Puerto Rico, and that's where you started teaming as the Samoan SWAT team. And you know, you won the tag team titles in Puerto Rico, but more importantly, I mean, you guys just really clicked as a team. Why do you think that? I mean, because you guys were just like ahead of the time, right? And what you were doing, you gelled so well right from the get go. Why? I mean, was it just the family thing? Why was that you guys clicked so well together?
We grew up together. You know, we were back in San Francisco in the back in the days of running around wild in the streets, you know, before we hooked up with my dad. And I got in trouble in California, and I had a choice to go to jail or go to my dad. So he was like, I'm going to my dad. So
yeah,
I went there and I got, you know, the start in it. And we started rolling with it and started training. My dad told me, it's not as easy as you think it is. He's going to make me respect the business, you know, of course. So when I told him I can do it, he was like, okay, well, you're going to, we were in Louisiana at the time.
Yeah.
We built.
Yeah.
And he was, well, you got to wrestle. And it was like five of them. There was a green guy. His name was Vinny Romero. Who was it? My dad, Dan Sika, Vinny Romero, Iron Sheik. And that was the four. Oh,
yeah.
And Ken Man. Sorry, Ken Man. So anyway, I had to wrestle all of them. And it was like, you got to wrestle all of us 3 minutes each. And, you know, and as a young kid, 3 minutes, that sounds pretty easy, you know, but
yeah,
it wasn't. It wasn't.
Yeah.
They all had their own styles and their own way of punishing me out there a little bit. But Sheik wanted to go last. He said, and I overhear him telling my dad, Alpha, I'm going to make him respect the business.
Of so course.
I can't breathe. I'm like, oh, shit, Sheik's the last one to put me. So he tried everything to pin me. He couldn't pin me. Then he just was like, screw it. And he put the sugar on me. He put an arm lock on, arm bar on me.
Yeah.
And I knew he wasn't going to break it. My dad's right there. He'd get jumped quick.
Yeah, yeah.
I just done it. I ain't going to quit. I ain't going to give up and go ahead and break it and stupid shit like that. And
yeah.
But, you know, things like that, you would never trade. You know, I'm glad I went through it that way and learned to respect the ring and the business and the boys before I had a chance of was thrown in there.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the way it was, right? I mean, they wanted to make sure, right? It was a closed society. They wanted to make sure you could respect and you were going to follow through and you weren't just someone trying to make a buck. And everything else. So, you know, that's what they were, you know, and they wanted to make sure you had what it took. And when you guys.
It all was good. Like I said, Dino gave me the chance to run over there as the top heel. So I got a chance to, you know, exert a little bit of the power that I had over there. That's when I had him bringing Rikishi up there because he was just starting to as a alpha of the Easy Prince.
Yeah.
Got him up there, and it was, you know, we couldn't be on the same team right then because I had already been there as a heel. So he was getting his experience anyway. So it was a perfect spot for him to, you know, be with family and still be able to hone the craft. And then from there, once we left there and we went to Puerto Rico, you don't forget we were raised in the ring by my dad and my uncle. So we're partial to tag team wrestling.
Yeah.
So we knew we had that down and we had our own little style and way of doing our things that we, you know, like to do out there. But yeah, we figured that we could do the best way to honor our people and thing like that would be to tag up and you know, follow in the old man's footsteps and see them.
Yeah, and the first time, like, really that I mean, at least that I kind of took notice of you, I think a lot of people maybe really started to take, you know, notice you guys was when you went to World Class. And, you know, you guys were feuding with the Von Erichs. You won the tag titles like three times. You had a really good run. But I have to ask, you hear all these stories. What was it like working with the Von Erichs? Because you hear all these stories about how, you know, Kerry was a little flaky. Kevin was a little stiff. You hear all these different things. What was it like for you working with these guys in World Class?
Oh, it was fun. I mean, at that time too, we were young. It was a lot of work, but it was fun. They had their own styles for sure, and it was just kind of our style too. So we would like to, you know, if you want to go that way, punch and kick and punch and kick, we can do that. We'd rather do that anyway. So, whenever Kerry started, you know, flaking off or you know drifting off for a little bit, then Fatu and Kevin used to get into it heavy all the time.
Yeah.
Man, I remember him bending Kevin over the back of a bleacher and just leveling. And then I was selling up into the crowd. And then I seen Kerry. Kerry got away and Kerry got down there. And when Junior was nailing him, Kerry picked up a chair ringside and I couldn't make it for the save to save it. And Kerry's looking at the people. He lifts his chair up and I looked him in his eyes. I said, don't you fucking put, don't you do that. And he just went, okay, and he put the chair down. It was tooth and nail.
Yeah, and you guys, you worked a lot, I mean, as with Buddy Jack, you know, Buddy Roberts kind of worked with you a lot. It was Rob, But Buddy, I mean, you know, he's kind of underappreciated, right? He's such a great mind. Been around forever, but obviously known for his Freebird run. It was big in Texas. That was kind of instantly putting you with Buddy. Just got you over instantly. Had to have gotten you guys heel heat, you know, just immediately.
Oh, yeah, it was. And Buddy was classic. You know, Buddy was Buddy, you know, out there. And growing up, that's all I wanted to do was be a free bird. I was kind of mad Buddy got the spot.
Yeah.
You know, but when they put Buddy with us, it was such classic, because that's when we became the SWAT team and we were able to, we had our own creative control kind of stuff there. We pretty much did whatever we wanted to over there. And that included dressing Buddy up in
the garb. But Buddy, man, he did so much to us, right? He had he wore the headgear stuff with the hair. I mean, he just did so much stuff in his career.
Oh yeah, and he'd party all night. He'd be at the airport, laying down on the bench, and I'd tell the boys, hold my bag. And I'd run down to the next terminal where Buddy was laying down, and I'd set his blue jeans on fire. And I'd run back and stand with the boys, and they go, "What was he doing?" I said, "Well, just keep watching Buddy." When the wind caught his jeans, he started kicking, he started screaming. He pulled the pants off, he screamed, "Damn some boys!"
Oh, man. And then obviously some of your big kind of mainstream attention, right? You wound up in WCW, mm-hmm. and managed by Paul Heyman at the time. And man, at that time, you guys stood out so much with your style, because the things you were doing, I mean, you was so much ahead of the time and just stood out so much at that time. And there's a lot, obviously, right? People nowadays trace, you know, Paul Heyman and the Bloodline back to him managing you guys, and it's a great story now, you know, when you look at it as an overview. What was it? Everybody has a story about Paul. What was it like working with Paul Heyman?
Oh, it was awesome. I mean, now that you look back on it and everything, I was a pain in his ass. But we had a lot of fun with Paul. You know, Paul and Jim Cornette, they used to always, always like go over the match for like 3 days. They would be going over
the match. Yeah.
And then I'd get mad because we'd go in there and they'd be like, "Okay, we'll have those guys do this and then we'll do this." And I was like, no. The other way around, you keep your spots while we're in there, you know, and don't take away from what we're doing. It's the kind of clash. And we didn't have a credit card back in them days.
Yeah.
Paul used to have to rent us the car.
Yeah.
And Paul all the time, he'd pull ribs back on us, you know, so Paul would like, get us a little tiny car, and they said that's all they had left, and we could hardly fit in that, you know.
Yeah.
Sports car, and then Paul in there. So I'm driving one day, and we're going down the highway in Georgia. I'm doing about 120, 130. I'm flying down, and I see the cops coming on the opposite, going the opposite way, and they pulled over in the medium. They're trying to come out behind me, but there's cars coming behind me, so they couldn't. And I seen them trying. Paul's sleeping on the passenger side. So I pull over on the side of the road and I grab Paul in a small package and I dump him in the driver's seat upside down and I slide over. Finally, the cops get behind us. And by the time Paul turns the right side up, the cops are knocking on the window of the car. And let me see your license and registration. And then Paul's like, "How fast was I going?" Then I get out the other side. I said, "Paul, you want me to drive? You're always getting in trouble."
He had no idea what was going on, did he?
Yeah, you don't really know what happened.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how cool is it, though? I mean, it's got to be kind of, I mean, you know, fun for the family, right? That, you know, he managed you guys then. Now he's so tied into the Bloodline stuff and your whole family in WWE. I mean, that's got to be kind of a cool little lineage. Paul's always respectful to the history, at least. And I mean, it's got to be kind of a cool thing to have that line.
It is. And Paul, you know, he turned out to be such a great mind for the business.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And, and then, I don't want to talk bad, but after Paul, you guys were managed for a while by Oliver Humperdinck. And you know what? You know what? I like Humperdinck. I know he was over in Florida. I don't feel like it clicked as well as Paul did. the whole big kahuna thing. I don't know what was, you know, what was going on. It just didn't seem to gel quite as well as Paul Heyman did. Paulie Dangerously did.
Yeah, no. I think Paul got tired of our shit. Honestly, Paul was a good sport about everything. He can't run on a car, I think, from Hertz, I think it is, I cut my hand one time and the Steiners drove by with Brian Pillman, Sting, and they started pelting this rental car because they knew Paul had rented it for us. So they started throwing cans of tuna and all kind of stuff. Whatever wasn't nailed down was getting thrown at us on the highway.
Yeah.
We pulled over at the gas station and bought all the eggs out of this one little grocery store that was on the side of it. Threw them in the car, and we jumped back in the car, and now we're trying to find these guys. We hit the highway again. Now our car's there hiding on the bushes on the damn side of the road when we come through. Brian Pillman's driving. Crazy ass. And then we just start getting pelted. So now we're chasing them. Needless to say, we sat on half of the eggs that we ran in there and bought. So we had barely any ammunition. We're turned sideways on the middle of the highway. Pillman's coming down the what is it? The meridian, the grass
north. Yeah. Yeah.
And he comes out here side, and now we're standing about 150 yards apart. And we all are standing outside of our cars that's sideways, blocking both lanes. And we just start running at each other and throwing eggs and whatever the hell that we had, and ended up cutting my hand, and we wrote SST and blood on the roof of the rental car on the inside. Paul was not too happy when he got the report from the rental car people.
Yeah. Well, this whole period was a lot of changes for you guys, right? I mean, not only the Oliver Humperdinck, but they brought in the Samoan Savage, kind of make you a three-man deal. Mm-hmm. And then they started calling you the New Wild Samoans for a while. What did you think of that? I mean, did they run that by you before they did it? Or what did you think of that?
They had mentioned it in passing, but it sounded more like they were just complimenting us, or, you know, not that they were labeling us or giving us the name. So yeah. I was very happy with Samoan Swag.
Yeah, I mean, given that, you know, you're with your dad and your uncle being the Wild Samoans, I would think it would, I don't know, be a little awkward being the New Wild Samoans. I mean, that's, you know, it's, I don't know, it's weird.
Yeah, but, they didn't, you know, this.
yeah, especially that you guys were already established in there as Samoan SWAT team in WC. Mm-hmm. It was just, but of course, that's a lot of WCW stuff at that time. It was so weird. They were throwing so much stuff against the wall. And,
what sticks, I know.
Yeah. and you worked quite a bit of singles matches at this time, and Fatu and Savage teamed more than often. So at this time, what were you guys all thinking of all this change that was going on?
The thing was, is we busted ass for the company, and we did our year. We got a good contract. Everybody was making real, real good money at that time.
Yeah.
At the end of our contract, we did our great run with the Road Warriors at the time. And
yeah.
And everything like that, and we were selling out when it was hard to sell out back then. And when it came time to renegotiate contracts, I wanted more money.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want to give us any more money. They thought that they could have us for cheaper, and I just disagreed with that, and I just said, well, thank you very much, maybe in the future we can. At that time, Fatu decided that he needed to stay there. He needed the job. He wanted to feed his family. So him and Savage started to team up.
Yeah.
And wanted to know if I'd mind, you know, on my way out, I could work, but I could work off contract and just by, you know, day by day.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But I'd mind on my way out, you know, doing some single matches, which I didn't, because I was able to work with like Eddie Gilbert and some good guys that I had a lot of fun with that I was close to. In the early WWF days as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but eventually you guys did leave WCW, and mm-hmm. you worked, you know, some international dates where, but in 92, you guys end up signing, you and Fatu end up signing with the WWF, the WWE, and you debuted the Head Shrinkers. Alpha was managing your father. So how much, man, that had to be just a blast for you to kind of get kind of back to the roots, your dad managing you on the, you know, the WWF stage. That had to be wild.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, we know. See, what we at the time, me and Kokina, we were tearing up Japan at the time. We were over there the other month. We were going like 6 times a year, which was, you know, good for that time. We didn't really need to work at the major companies because we were able to support our families just doing with Japan. So he was, it was me and Kokina. He wrestled, Yoko wrestled as Kokina then.
Yep.
So we did a lot of tag teaming there. Then we got the chance to get a tryout or a debut with WWE, and that was the head shrinkers at that time was supposed to be me and Yoko.
Okay, gotcha.
Yoko had gotten his leg cut and infected in Mexico when he was doing the indie down there. So when it came time, the date for the tryout, for the debut, he couldn't do anything because of his infection. Fatu was there. He had rode with my father and I to the town, and we already have a history. We already know, you know, that it's not over. You know, just give us a chance, put us out there, and if you like it, you like it. If you don't, we'll leave. So they put us out there, and me and, like, you already know, me and Fatu was a Samoan Swatini, and we already had our stuff down to a T.
Yeah.
And so it was lucky that he was there, because then we got the job there, and then when Yoko healed up, he came in, and he got his spot there, too, so it was good. It was an awesome time for the family.
Yeah. That's crazy to think how different it would have been had you know, Yoko not had that injury. What, you know, how would that have altered things, right? If it had been you and him, how would that have altered his singles? You know, it's so wild to think. I mean, it obviously worked out great for everybody.
Yes.
But it's so wild how little things, just certain things happen to change his stuff. And that is nuts. And you guys, I mean, you guys had a great run. You did a face run, you know, face, kind of a face turn in 94, managed by Lou Albano, and you won the tag titles. Did you have a preference of working face or heel, or did it matter to you?
At the time, it didn't matter. I bitched and went to bat because I thought that, you know, we worked hard for the year, and I felt that we should have the belts at the time.
Yeah.
Vince McMahon said, I can give you the belts tonight. I can give you the belts tomorrow. Then, you know, I can give you the belts anytime. It's the longevity that I've ever. And being young, you just don't, you know, you don't look into what they're saying. You know, you're just like, you know, I just want to do this. I want to show my worth. I want to do this and that. So, yeah, it was a weird time. It was a weird time.
Yeah. And I did want to ask, you guys, I mean, you were managed by, you had some great managers, right? I mean, you had your father Offa, Paul Heyman, Oliver Humperdinck, Lou Albano. Did you have a manager that you preferred to work with of that bunch? Did you prefer to not have a manager, or did it just?
No, I did. I did. I like, because we didn't really, weren't sharp on interviews, speaking English, public talking. So it was always good to have somebody talking for us. And
yeah.
We'd rather be the animals, you know, so. But Paulie, Paulie would be my pick. And,
sure. And
my dad, he was always ribbing us out there. So,
yeah. I mean, obviously, Paulie probably the best talker of the bunch. And what happened? Because you kind of end up just kind of disappearing, and then Barbarian came in and started teaming with you. What happened with that? With you kind of leaving WWE there for a bit?
I had a fractured hip, and I worked with that for like a year. And I had to take some time off with that. At the same time, I felt that we weren't treated like everyone else was treated at the time, I guess.
Yeah.
And it showed my rebellions and kind of, you know, I didn't want to be the one to leave and cost everybody, you know, a job or work or feeding their family or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So easier for me to just let Sione and Junior do that at the time, while I just expressed my feelings and love.
And they kind of end up they end up repackaging Fatu, right? And this, you know, I don't know what he thought of it. It seemed like kind of a goofy, this positive, ultra positive gimmick, but whatever it might be, And then you and your cousin Matt, the future Rosie, you kind of returned for a bit, as you were known as the Samoan Gangster Party, and you kind of came back for a bit, but you kind of watched Fatu from afar. It didn't really go anywhere though. What happened with that? Why, what was going on during this? Seemed like a very weird time for you guys.
We had a little bit of creative control when we came back at that time. That's what I thought anyway. So when we came back, we were going to do the thing to where we were watching Fatu from afar and just, what are you doing? They're making a joke out of you. So we were trying to a bloodline of sorts, but that's kind of like where we were trying to go with that. We did a lot of stuff from New Jack City that we took, our storylines from, that we were, our outfits were geared on and things like that. But then the thing started. It was like the same day, same thing, no matter how many things changed, yet they stay the same. You know the same. So yeah, I was just done with it. And at that time, Paulie was doing some great things in ECW, and we wanted to, go somewhere where we were, I don't know, appreciated, we felt.
Well, yeah, and but like I said, WWF at that time was just trying to do this super ultra PG type thing, right? They were all the steroid stuff, I guess. I don't know. They were trying to be squeaky clean. But yeah, you and Rosie, the future Rosie, the Samoan Gangster Party, you did go to ECW. And like you said, I'm sure that was the connection with Paul Lee, right? Paul Lee brought you in. And you feuded with the gangsters. And what did you think of working with, because New Jack and Mustafa, because you hear so much story about New Jack and how unpredictable and wild, blah, 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 he is.
Yes.
So how was it working with them?
It was easy. It was no different than anybody else, really. I mean, we heard the same stories too, so we went out with both eyes open, but never nothing, never had an issue.
Yeah, you always hear if as long as you treat New Jack right and are straight up with him, there's no problems. And I mean, I don't think New Jack's gonna try to bullshit you guys. So, I mean, you hear New Jack, but it's typically with guys that's he knows he can whatever get one on. He's not gonna do that with you. But I mean, how did you enjoy your time there in ECW? I know it wasn't a super long run, but.
I did because I believed in the product. I believed in the it could go far. There was no competition, and this to me, I loved it. I liked the edgy stuff. I liked the thing. It was kind of right down the alley that I like to go.
Well, I mean, and you've talked about, right, that you're not afraid to kind of stand up, speak your mind when something you've said that you've mentioned a couple of times, right, with the tag titles or that you speak up when you feel the need. Do you feel that that kind of hurt your career a little bit? That you weren't just kind of this company guy, maybe? I don't know how to phrase it.
Yeah, I said no. I mean, I speak. I didn't do anything to knock it. I think if we would have went in stronger as a team and stick together side by side and without breaking, I think that we would have got what we asked for. But for the story, and I have no regrets. And
Of course, yeah.
my son is loving the business right now, so.
And I do want to talk about him in just a second. And during the Attitude Era, right, Rikishi had a great run, right? Yoko was there during a good part of that. Was there ever did you ever have any conversations at any point in time of coming back to WWE and having another run or no?
No. Once I wrapped up with the gangster, with the Samoan Gangsters party thing, with them, yeah, I was pretty much done with WWE at that time.
And like you mentioned, right, your son Lance, he wrestles now. And just, man, we could spend hours just talking about your family and all the generations and this. I mean, it's fascinating, right? And everybody tries to dissect it, and it is mind-boggling. about your family and the professional wrestlers that have been come through. What do you think? I mean, of your son Lance and those, you know, and his cousins and whatnot, continuing on this, the next generation of your family in professional wrestling.
Oh, I love it. I mean, I love to be able to see these kids, you know, finally get everything that we worked so hard for, you know, and I'm glad to see them be able to pull in on some of these fruits and stuff. So I'm very proud of the twins and Joe and my son, too. I mean, his work ethic is, you know, what turned him around again. He was just in Japan a couple, what was it, about a year ago, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, I always had a dream for him to go there. I would always tell him, you know, that how me and Yoko used to go over there. We did most of our stuff over there when we were not with a major company, because he always wanted to go with WWF, but there was so many of us in there already.
Yeah.
So just, you know, go to the gym, work out, go to Japan, you know. And you know, he was patient and he stuck with it. He's just getting over a hernia now. So
yeah.
Cleared up hopefully this month, but yeah. Yeah, looking forward to him turning it up another notch.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, I've seen some of his work in it. I mean, yeah, he's super talented, right? And he's, but it's got to be, it just you know, I don't know if you how close you follow the modern product or how much you want, but it's got to be when you your family just to think of. I mean, you guys right now, I mean, you pretty much own the WWE. Let's be real. That is the most captivating storyline topic in the WWE, right? Everybody wants to know what's going on. Not only now is it the bloodline, but right there's it's the old bloodline, the new blood. It's so fascinating. It's so, you know, it's captivating. It's such great. It's I can't imagine what it's like for you. You just got to sit back and kind of just smile when you see all this family on TV. And how great the work is and what they're doing on this group, this stage right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh yeah, I'm definitely proud of sitting back watching these guys do their thing and knowing and just watching their face, how they have the crowd and, you know, their acceptance. And I don't know, it's just total package what it is. And I'm very proud of all of them.
Yeah, and it's wild because it's like, you know, wrestling, it's always the wrestling business. You've always had to, right? Everybody's always embellished things, right? And you've added things, right? And but with your family, you don't have to, right? When they put up the family tree of your family, and they talk about, you know, back to the Wild Samoans and this, that none of that's embellished. That's just the cold truth. Mm-hmm. And your family has been such an impact on professional wrestling for decades. And it's just nuts. It's just nuts. And you, I mean, no matter what time period you want to look at, your family's there, and your family is made a huge impact. And like I said, I know you recently lost your father. You recently lost your uncle. I don't know that there's ever. I mean, the argument we made, there's a more impactful tag team than the Wild Samoans.
Yeah, and all, you know, due to them, all credit goes to them. You know, they are the ones that, you know, made sure that we were brought into it right with our eyes open and business smart, and all credit is due to them, all glory to them.
And that's not even considering the non-family people, right, that they've trained, that's come through their schools, mm-hmm. and everything. I mean, their thumbprint is just all over wrestling. And I mean, I, you know, I remember, you know, your father and your uncle. I was terrified of them, you know, when I watched them on TV. You know, it's you believed, right? Mm-hmm. You thought they were guys that would do what it was captivating, and it's just carried on generation after generation after. Same with you and Rikishi, you and Fatu. As the head shrinkers and on into the bloodline now. And it's, you know, this, it's just captivating. And what I'm so it's, I don't know. I don't even know how to put it into words. What is it that they're feeding your family that,
hey,
that produces this generation after generation.
It's just now hungry, hungry. They're going out there hungry with the attitude of "Let's do this, let's do this." Give me the ball.
Yeah, I mean, is there any pressure on you guys to go into the business, or is it just this? Is it just this urge to follow in the family footsteps? And to do, I mean, it's hard for someone outside of that realm to grasp. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, you know, when you go in, you want to leave your mark. No matter who's with you, who's in your family, you still want to leave your mark. And you already know the mark that were left before you. So you already know that the task, you're up to the task if you're going to try to be one of the ones to keep, you know, climbing. I don't know. I don't know the right words. That's why I have manager.
I mean, imagine, and again, I don't want to speak for you, but I imagine there was a lot of your father saying, "Hey, you know, if you're going to do this, don't embarrass the family, right? Make sure if you do it 100%, mm-hmm. and go all the way." And, you know, I guess it's, you know, most of us that don't experience that, following your father's footsteps or your family's footsteps, it's just hard to capture what that must be like, to be your family, to be so entrenched within a business. It's just beautiful. It just really is. It's so hard to think of. Do you have, just in your day-to-day, is there anything, any wisdom or whatever that your father spoke to you that you go back to in just your day-to-day life that resonates with you?
My days growing up, it was always respect the business, and always keep the kayfabe, always do that. As time went on, he became more of a teacher, he helped so many people, like we talked mm-hmm. about before. Everything that he tells you, you want to suck it up like a sponge. So there's not just one thing that I could say that sticks out in my mind. Here's one. It's not what you make, it's what you save.
Yeah. Well, what's it like? I mean, because there's those of us that watched your father on TV as a wild Samoan. What's it like? What's he like as a father? I mean, is he the kind of guy that comes and sits in a chair, cheers you on in Little League, and just can detach from? I mean, how does that work? What's he like as a father away from wrestling?
When you had a bad report card, that was the longest walk home of your life. I know that one. He always wanted us to do good in school. He always wanted us all to, go farther than he did. And just, that's every father's dream.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, it's odd to think of these guys that we watch on TV and we look up to, just thinking of them as just, a day-to-day father sometimes, you know, and what they do when they're not on the road, obviously. It's just, it's peculiar to think of that.
That was my thing. I had to get out of the house. Can I go with you to the show tonight? If I was bad, I can't go. If I was good, I was 9, 10 years old. I'm selling 8x10 pictures for $1 of my dad and my uncle. And I'm just walking around just all night. I'm making like $100 a night back in the 70s. I tell my dad, I need some more pictures. He said, well, go buy it. It just made $100.
Just hustling from childhood on, huh? Just oh, man. I'm curious. Tell us, what's something, because, you know, there's guys like me that only know you from seeing you on television, right? Seeing you as a head shrinker, as a member of the Samoan SWAT team, as a member of the Samoan Gangster Party. So what's something that fans may not know about Samu as a person? I mean, do you have any quirky hobbies or quirky talents that might surprise any of us?
No, I did. I do a lot of fishing, but that's boring. I've done what was it? Capadonna Wu-Tang Clan video, but that was back in the days.
Oh,
I
yeah.
had my mad, yeah, my dad was mad at me again. But
Wait, he was mad at you because you did the Wu-Tang video?
yeah, well, no, because I was hanging around with the Wu-Tangs.
Wait a minute. Wait, hold on. So why was he mad at you? I mean, did what was his reasoning for being mad at you for hanging around with the Wu-Tang?
Well, we were in this video. It's called Run. It was by Capadonna.
Okay.
And my dad was like the big Oriental drug dealer, and we were his bodyguards. And we come time to shoot our piece. It was time to shoot our thing, and they couldn't find me. And I was hanging out in the back with the Wu-Tang Clan. So he wasn't happy too much because they had to look for me, as usual, at least.
Gotcha. Okay. So your dad was in the video as well.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I wasn't aware of that. I'll have to go look that up. And that's funny. But he wasn't pleased with you because he couldn't find you when it was time to shoot your scene, huh?
Yeah, well, no, because when he did find me, I was in the room with all the smoke coming out of it and everything.
That's there. There you go. Okay. That's what I was going
But he
at.
was like, yeah, I know where. He just is letting me know he knew where I was at.
There you go. Okay. That's what I figured. That's what. So Alpha didn't partake in the herbal stuff,
I've never say never.
Well, yeah, right. Yeah, not, I mean, I guess it's one, the parents do one thing and then say another thing sometimes with their kids. So, oh man. I would have loved to have seen Alpha hanging with the Wu-Tang, but,
I wish he would have that day too. He would have been a little calmer.
wouldn't have come down so hard on you, huh? Oh man. Oh, so tell me what's Samu up to these days? You, I mean, any projects you got going on? Any are you doing any appearances, any promotions? What's going on with you right now?
Comic cons and some other cons, a lot of fishing. I'm down in Pensacola, down in Florida, so
Yeah.
getting
Yeah.
turned all my grandkids down here, so I
Yeah,
could
I got a son, down there in Pensacola. That's where he lives. And
awesome.
yeah, so yeah, he just moved there not too long ago. So I plan to go down there sometime in the future. Maybe you and I can meet, do a lunch or something.
Let's
And
get together, break some
yeah.
bread.
That's right. Always good. I like to eat.
You too.
And yeah, I mean your family's known for that Pensacola area, right? That's always where where the Samoans ran their school and stuff, right? I mean, Pensacola was kind of their turf.
We seen the beach here in the 70s. It was over. It was like my dad and uncle, they was like, this is it. So we kind of always came back here. I moved away for 33 years. My wife's from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, so.
Oh yeah.
And I was up there for a while my kids were grown, and now my grandkids are. I'm trying to get them down to Florida, get some southern hospitality in them.
Yeah, there's a good chance in the near future, the next year or two, that I may wind up in that area as well.
Me
So
too.
there you go. What I mean, is there a wrestling scene still in Pensacola at all? I mean, obviously it was always a hotbed for wrestling. Is there much to speak of now?
No, not too much, but my dad's last show in Mineola, I collected another ring and a bunch of guardrails and some mats, so I have this whole setup just sitting.
Ah.
I might dabble in there,
There you
probably.
go. Never know, huh? Well, do
Especially
you?
a memorial for him and Sika.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you do, let me know. I'll help plug it and promote it, and I'll come down. I'll come down and crash at my son's, and we'll come to the show. And
That'd be.
yeah. So like you said, right? You do a lot of conventions. I've seen your name pop up at all kinds of conventions and different things. So is there a way? Do you have a way that fans can follow you to keep track of when you make these appearances and things, or
Yeah, I'm on Facebook. Samu on Hawaii on Facebook. I do most of my stuff there. Instagram as well, but
okay.
that's all Facebook tapped in. Yeah, that's about it. Like I said, I'm not doing too much anymore. Just a lot of fishing, being grandpa.
There you go. Enjoying life. That's the way it is, man. And man, same again. I just wanted to kind of do an overview here. You and I could deep dive into any one of these topics and talk for a while, I think. But I just kind of wanted to give a little overview. There's so much with your family to talk about that it's just there's not enough time. Yeah, and I know you and I have been trying to connect for a while, and we've had one thing after another. I'm so happy that we finally got to do this, and I finally, I mean, I feel like you and I are friends, and this is the first time we're actually spoke because we've exchanged so many messages, and
I'm glad we got it taken care of. A lot of bad luck has hit us in the last couple of months.
Hey, you bums, we have to take a quick break.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to The Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guides for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network? Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at Rasslin Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade? So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
Hey, it's Bob Smith, and guess what? The Outdated Wrestling Hour is now part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. But hey, no fear, you're still going to hear the unique guests, comedy, music, authors, journalists, funny people. Who knows who's going to end up on the Outdated Wrestling Hour? Remember, it's all new and all old. So check it out in the WrestleCopia Podcast Network and wherever you get your podcasts. Listen if you know what's good for you.
Hey everybody, Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review, where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews, sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to uswapodcast.com.
We're back on Wrestling Nostalgia.
All right, and thank you to Samu for coming on the show. What a great interview. He and I went back and forth trying to get this interview scheduled for so long. Things came up on his end. Things were happening, and lots of, major things in his life. There was, things that came up in mind that caused rescheduling. We had equipment, technical, just everything that, I'm not joking and talking months trying to get this scheduled and finalized, and finally got it done. We hope you enjoyed it. Guys, give me a follow on social media. I'm on pretty much any podcast, or excuse me, any social media platform. Just go and look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty, or just do a search of The Dave Dynasty, all one word. And I am on pretty much any podcast platform, so whichever one you listen to, make sure you do subscribe, rate, review, share, etc. Also, go check out all the other WrestleCopia network of podcasts. All you got to do is search those by name, or you can go to WrestleCopia.com, check them all out, and go from there. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Go to ClassicWrestling.net or download the Ultimate Classic Wrestling app on all of your devices. Next episode, we're talking Memphis Wrestling. My guest will be Randy Hales. We talk Memphis, we talk Power Pro Wrestling, and much more, so you don't want to miss this episode. So once again, just do a quick check, and make sure you're subscribed. Yeah? You're good? Okay, cool. Let's go on. thank you to all the listeners, the supporters, and everybody out there for all your follows, your interactions, your listens, your downloads, etc. Thank you guys for everything you do to support me and to support Wrestling Nostalgia. All right, let's get out of here. We'll see you again next episode with my guest, Randy Hales. So wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.
Wrestling Nostalgia is copyright Dave Dynasty. Bruiser voice done by John Lawson.